It's Monday, August 21st. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show presented by Toyota. It's a hell of a day to talk ball, man. And joining me to do just that, coming off a big batch of preseason games, it's Scott Bienowski. Scott, what's going on, buddy?
Not much. Just a level of excitement amping up. We're getting closer and closer to the start of the season. And that means that your most important fantasy drafts are probably this week or the next week. This is the go time. This is the crunch time. This is where it really matters. This is why you lift all of them weights, so you can dominate the next couple of weeks and then get to the glorious start of the NFL season. So I'm pumped, man. It feels like every preseason feels interminably long to me. But once we hit late August, it's really close. So let's get going, man.
It is very close. And as you mentioned, this is a very important time, which is why this week on the podcast, it's Conviction Week. Basically, we are going to go through all the big topics in fantasy and give you the things that we truly, truly most believe in here. Starting today, it's Sleepers Week. We're also going to sneak in Scott's All Boring Team, just because I think that's like the perfect, we're going to really jazz you up with all these sleepers, and then we're going to bring you down maybe to a slow pace, really simmer it off with the All Boring Team. We've got Eckler on later this week to do some bold predictions from you people out there. If you haven't listened to that episode yet, make sure you find out how to get your bold prediction into the mailbag. AskAustin@yahoosports.com. That's where you can send that. We've got busts. We've got breakouts. We've got the betting bros are back for their favorite betting picks of the year, the conviction picks there. So we got it all here on Conviction Week. But today is going to be a great day to get it started. But before we do that, Scott, let's just talk a few things coming off of preseason week two. Remember, the preseason used to be 4 weeks long. Now it's not. It's only three games. So this might be when teams are sort of kind of using the dress rehearsal type thing. Although I know Aaron Rodgers is supposedly playing in the third preseason game. So it's much more hit and miss than it used to be. But one thing we did see from this past week's game, we saw Javonte Williams make his return. We know that he's coming off a multi-ligament ACL tear. Javonte got I would just pretty much call it like almost a committee approach with Samaje Perine, who subbed in on third down. But we did see Javonte get five targets. Scott, this is a guy that I haven't been really clicking on a ton in early drafts. He's a guy that I haven't been really jazzed up about. I have my questions about the Denver offense, as you know. And of course, he's kind of a tricky case on his own. But did anything you see over the weekend change your mind with Javonte Williams? Or where do you kind of stand on him at this point?
Yeah, I'm with you. I have some cold feet on this. I don't have any Williams yet. I have maybe an odd P. Ryan share here or there. But this offense, they had a fourth down touchdown pass to Jerry Jeudy in the first preseason game. And other than that, the ones have done almost nothing. They've looked really bad. And I know it's like preseason, it's so easy to wipe it out. But like what teams take preseason seriously? What teams should we care about what the results are? Well, when a team has changed head coaches and they're trying to fix their quarterback, I want to see something to feel good about with this offense. And what's happened, right? They haven't moved the ball. Greg Dulcich is playing behind Troutman.
Yeah.
I don't want to draft these running backs. And also, even if Denver, I know their defense is good. We know Sean Payton's a good coach. But the AFC has so many teams that you know are going to be good. And then there's teams that probably will be good. Denver could be a decent team and still go 7-10. I'm still going to die on that Jeudy hill. I'm still going to be overweight on Jerry Jeudy, but I don't think there's anybody else on this offense that I can view as a proactive pick. And that includes both of their running backs.
Yeah. Weirdly enough, if Williams was going to get off to that, like J.K. Dobbins slow start to the season from last year, they weren't going to play him in the first 3 weeks. So they're going to take it extremely slow. Mm-hmm. I would have thought that Samaje Perine would make a really nice pick. Especially if you're taking like a Breece Hall or one of these guys is going to like Breece Hall is a great example. Like you think he's going to get off to a slow start. Maybe you take Samaje Perine to sort of get that backfield going there. You're just one of these teams that faded running back early. You're taking like the hero RB approach. Mm-hmm. Maybe you take Samaje Perine if he was going to be the guy in the first 3 weeks. But now he might be like sort of what he was in Cincinnati, which is a glorified three down back now on a worse offense. So in a weird way, I haven't moved my opinion much on Javonte, which does scare me a little bit, Scott, because I do think he's a really, really good back. And that was one of the only things that Russell Wilson was doing well at the early portion of last season was he was involving Javonte Williams in the passing game, almost like weirdly too much sometimes, where I'd be like, he'd be so quick to that check down. So now that we've got Javonte seemingly he's going to ramp up pretty well, I don't really want either of these running backs. And that is unfortunate because I do think Javonte Williams is a really good player. That does scare me a little bit.
Yeah, let me piggyback on the point you were making about if Williams were to be out and Perine, one of those early get quick start, guys, right? Mr. September. a lot of people look at the fantasy season and say, okay, who's playing who in week 15, week 16, week 17? I'm already in the playoffs. I'm going to win the championship because I know the playoff schedules. And I always say, well, I want to play fantasy football with a microscope, not a telescope. I want to overanalyze what's in front of me, and I'll get to what I get to later in the season. This is a time I will look at the second half of the season or those playoff weeks, but it's like in the middle of the year. It's not what I'm drafting. I think that's actually a fool's errand. Mm-hmm. So if you want to make a Mr. September pick, and I don't think Piran's in play anymore, maybe a few weeks ago he would have, Jamal Williams is your guy. Alvin Kamara, right? Yeah. 3-game suspension. Jamal Williams already has the goal line equity. He might get his busiest workloads of the season in September. And then there's also the upside of what if, you know, Kamara comes back and gets hurt or something goes wrong there, that maybe Williams has a bigger role later in the season. There's no guarantee his role has to disappear. They brought him in to score 10 touchdowns. He's going to score 10 touchdowns, and maybe half of those will come in September. So you want to make a Mr. September pick, I steer you to New Orleans.
Yeah, the first game of the season is against Tennessee Titans, who have been one of the best run defenses in the NFL the last few years. So it's like, but we don't know that much about the schedule. That could be tough. And again, he still is probably going to get 20 touches in that week one game, because Kendre Miller is a rookie running back I like, but he's kind of had an up and down offseason, injuries and stuff like that. It seems like he really dodged a bullet overall there, but still, I love that Williams call. Is like, he could be Mr. September, right? And then you know how it's gonna go, Scott. Every fantasy analyst in week five or whatever, or week four, as soon as this is when you gotta sell Jamal Williams, this is when you gotta trade him, as if like nobody else on planet Earth knows that Alvin Kamara is coming back.
It drives me crazy when any fantasy analysis that assumes your opponents don't have the internet, right? Or they're just total village idiots. It's like, yeah, of course. If your league is that easy to beat, just make sure you get the entry fees up front and then, you know, start building a trophy case. We're trying to help people who actually have to beat other competitive people in a league. So it's good work if you can get it. If you can execute those things, sure, keep doing it, man.
My favorite thing about working with you, Scott, for the last, like, it's been like 5 years now, is that now I know the exact buttons to that. Like, I know what irritates you like that. Same with the everybody taking the victory lap on everybody likes this player. So just completely making up a scenario that hasn't even actually happening and just be like, yes, this will get Scott a little riled up. So yeah, I'm glad we have.
You know me, Matt. You know me.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know, Tyler Lockett, that's the way to my heart. So we'll talk about that a little bit later. But Brock Purdy and Tua both return to the field. Let's start with Purdy here. I think Purdy appeared really to show no rust coming off the UCL surgery. I think he, you know, nothing. Again, he's not in there forever. You can't take a ton away. But I like the fact that he got out there 4 of 5 for 65 yards. It was, again, a lot of yards after catch. We know how it works with the San Francisco offense. But it's just crazy that, you know, Dalton's made this point a ton. Brock Purdy's ADP still kind of like assumes he's not, like, as if he's not playing. We've known now for months that he's going to play in week one. He's quarterback 20. I think he makes a decent bit of sense if you go for like I think he could be a discount Kirk Cousins, who obviously is the QB 12 in ADP. So I just think it's great to see Purdy out there. And it feels like we've come a long way from when he has the UCL injury. It seems like catastrophic at this point. Tua throws an interception on his first pass. I know people made a lot of, like, he got kind of taken to the ground at one point. It looked like he better protected himself, but he did lead a touchdown drive. Honestly, it's just good to see these guys out there because they're going to be captaining offenses that we really care about.
Right. I mean, if you asked every NFL quarterback, what offense would you like to be teleported into? San Francisco, with their skill talent and with Kyle Shanahan's scheming, seems like the number one answer to me. And Brock Purdy, exactly what Dalton said, right? His ADP priced in some uncertainty that doesn't exist anymore. He's going to start opening day. They are, look, I know they still have Darnold. They still have Trey Lance, who's played a ton in the preseason, probably as a showcase. But they believe in Brock Purdy. All he did was play well in his rookie season. And he's a guy who he always measured well in a lot of, like, secondary metrics and intangible things that I don't see why he can't be a 10-year starter in the NFL. He's never going to be an MVP or anything, but could Brock Purdy be the quarterback 11 or the quarterback 10 or something like that? Yeah, look at the pieces around him. Of course he could be.
It's funny. The entire trade up for Trey Lance was kind of based on this idea. And, you know, who knows how the inner workings of the building really went. But, you know, there was obviously all the Shanahan wanted Mac Jones because he's always just wanted a guy that's just, I'm going to point. That's where you shoot, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to design everything for you and you just follow my plan. But, you know, Shanahan had talked about after seeing Josh Allen live, like, man, that, you know, those type of guys make a difference for you. That's why you trade up for Trey Lance. And they're right back at a guy that I think is perfectly suited to be, like I said, Kirk Cousins. This is what the offense is. This is where you shoot. right where I'm pointing, hit the targets. Okay. And he can do that pretty well. So I think Purdy, I think sometimes you get a little carried away with these under the radar guys. Like, is he really going to be the next Kurt Warner or Tom Brady or something like that? Maybe not, but I think he's going to be a very good starter for a long time. That's kind of where I've stood on.
But couldn't he be Andy Dalton? And that's a win, right?
Oh, it's a huge win. He's the last freaking pick in the draft, right? Mm-hmm. And if he's Cousins, that's a huge win.
Sure.
That's a huge win if he's Kirk Cousins. Jordan Love, more quarterback stuff here. Jordan Love and the offense looked pretty good in the second preseason game for the Green Bay Packers. I think they looked pretty good in the first game. The game was suspended, actually, this one in the early fourth quarter when Pats rookie cornerback Isaiah Bolden ran into a teammate, was motionless before being taken to a local hospital. Fortunately for Bolden, was released from the hospital, but the game was just straight up canceled. The Patriots did their joint practices with the Titans. So wishing the best for Bolden and everybody in New England. But Jordan Love completed 5 of 8 passes for 84 yards and a touchdown to Jaden Reed, the rookie receiver there. He had a big completion to Romeo Doubs down the sideline. Scott, are the kids all right in Green Bay? This very young offense has looked pretty good in the preseason so far.
Yeah, I'm still a long way from trusting Love. The player I'm worried about that I might be wrong is Christian Watson, who I don't seem to be getting anywhere. And I think he has double-digit touchdown potential. He's certainly the alpha in their receiver room. But I don't hold this against you or anybody else. I think we're so eager to see what Love is that when he goes 5 for 8 in a game, it's, oh, Jordan Love looks great.
Yeah, we've seen so little of him.
It's a preseason game. And most teams play vanilla defense in the preseason. God knows the Patriots always do that, right? They're giving nothing away. You're lucky if Bill Belichick can concede that there's a game on the weekend because he's not that type of guy. But I'm afraid that Jordan Love is going to throw up all over himself week 1 and people are going to be like, man, this franchise had Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers for 100 years in a row and now they have Jordan Love. Good luck with that. Are you getting Christian Watson? Or you mentioned Reed had a touchdown. Dobbs looked good. There's a rookie tight end who's popped here. I mean, what part of the Green Bay offense are you investing in?
Worth noting too that they open the season in Chicago, in Atlanta. Defense is volatile year to year, but last year those were two of the weakest defenses, two of the friendliest matchups.
A good lift off. That's what you want, right? Two non-playoff teams, right?
Yeah, he gets Detroit in he gets New Orleans in week 3. That should be a formidable defense, but Detroit in week 4, Las Vegas in week 5. That is a pretty clean opener right up until the week 6 bye for the Green Bay Packers.
You couldn't ask for a better opening week schedule. Yeah. No, those are the 5 you want for sure.
On paper. And the Saints are a good defense. They scare me a little bit there in week 3, but it's in Green Bay. So that is a pretty friendly liftoff for Jordan Love. To answer your question, though, I haven't been getting a lot of Christian Watson every now and again. I would say he's definitely not a red light pick, to use the Scott Pienowski terminology, but he's like maybe a yellow light, depends on, there just seems to normally be somebody in the room that likes Christian Watson more than me. I mentioned him on the Hardest Players to Rank podcast at the beginning of the month. I had that conversation with Scott Barrett, who was basically like, he thinks that Christian Watson is like Randy Moss if Randy Moss was mortal. Dwayne McFarlane liked him a lot. We had him on the podcast.
Compared to Randy Moss?
Right.
I love Scott Barrett. I love everybody at Fantasy Points. I would not compare anybody to Randy Moss ever. Yeah.
I guess the Randy Moss, if he was mortal, right?
Randy Moss isn't mortal. But he's not. The whole point.
Exactly. Right. So I think that's if he's mortal is doing the heavy lifting there. But I'm with you that, see, like you said, he's definitely the alpha there, which I think he has to be the lead target getter, most likely. But are we talking about Christian Watson? My thing with him as a player is just, is he a guy that's going to get 130, 140 targets? Like, is he that type of player? Or is he more of like, I've always compared him to Martavis Bryant, like a boom bust number 2 receiver. They don't have a 1. We'll talk about one of the players I really like on the offense later on in the show, but I think it could be a little bit more spread out, right? Where Aaron Rodgers was going like touchdown to check down so often last year and not using that intermediate area and like really not reading the plays out, really not reading the offense out. He's like, all right, I'm chucking it down the field to Christian Watson, or all right, I'm dumping it off to Christian Watson here. So I've just been a little, I'm not fading Christian Watson. I actually really like the player as well. He's just a guy that I've been sort of like mixed on.
Gut feel. It's 5 years from now. Is Jordan Love the Green Bay Packers starting quarterback?
I have no idea. I'm going to say no, just because just because the Packers privilege has to stop at some point, right? Like the Packers quarterback privilege has to end here at some point. You can't go like, I mean, Jordan Love can be the quarterback in 5 years and not be a Hall of Famer, but that is unbelievable stability at the position if he's still there. So I'm going to say,
right. No. Yeah. Our friend Dave Damachek once ranked all the different franchise positions in sports, like Lakers center, Pittsburgh Penguins center, or, you know, Green Bay Packers quarterback. Just some teams have been really lucky. I mean, how do the Penguins go from Mario Lemieux to Sidney Crosby? Or yeah, look at all the great players who played for the Lakers, you know, in part because the NBA wants the best players to be in the biggest cities. Jordan Love's going to have to prove it to me. And if he proves it to me, and if Christian Watson comes along for the ride, or I knew you have a Green Bay surprise later, then I'm just going to get beat with those guys, and I'm fine with that.
All right, rookie wide receivers flashed a little bit this week as well. Jackson Smith and Jigba had a great catch and run from Drew Lock. Hell of a throw from Drew Lock, I will say that. Drew Lock's time is preseason. That's Drew Lock season, so way to go. Although
Mr. August for Drew Lock, for sure.
JSN was good. Jalen Hyatt had a drop, but he also had a deep touchdown catch that looked exactly like those Mickey Mouse plays that they would run, the Looney Tunes offense that they would run in Tennessee. Just he ran a corner route and just, you know, ran past the entire defense wide open there. That's probably not going to happen in the regular season, although Jalen Hyatt has been gaining ground there. Trey Palmer continues to kind of make some plays in Tampa Bay. He could be the number three receiver there now that Russell Gage is out for the year. There's really no clarity yet at quarterback, although I think it's most likely Baker Mayfield is going to start. Kyle Trask played a ton. Baker Mayfield didn't even play against the Jets. And Rashee Rice, 8 of 9 targets for 96 yards in the Chiefs preseason matchup against the Arizona Cardinals. And I want to start with Rashee Rice here. And I mean, any of these guys stand out to you or any other rookie receivers, just take it from there. But I was asked about Rashee Rice a couple of times because his reception perception profile wasn't very good from his collegiate final season. But he also played through, I think, a foot injury, which I think is a big reason why those results were not good. So there's a little bit of a caveat there. I think he has a lot of talent, though. He's got a lot of potential as a yak player. He's got a lot of potential as a contested catch player. I think he's going to play a little bit for the Chiefs. And I would say that the Chiefs, like, target distribution with Patrick Mahomes, just how spread out it was in the preseason, I liked some of the players there. One guy we'll talk about later, but there's no doubt it's going to be a very spread out receiver rotation there.
Yeah, somehow last year Mahomes wins the MVP and they got almost no mileage from their wide receivers. Juju eked over 900 yards, had no touchdown equity. And anything else that you followed with their wide receivers didn't pay off. So we're looking, because it's Andy Reid, because it's Mahomes, because there's been a lot of turnover at that position. And we know, I mean, as great as Kelce is, you have to throw the ball to somebody else. And even the running backs aren't, you know, there's not a dominant, it's not like a Marshall Faulk or a Tiki Barber in this running back room either. So we're looking for a possible hit. You know, first of all, I want to congratulate Arizona for trying to make every Kansas City pass play successful. I think Kansas City as a team, they had 4 quarterbacks play and they went like 31 for 38 for like 400 yards and 3 touchdowns or something like that. It was, the level of compete was terrible. And I get it. You're trying to figure out who's making your roster and it's, and you're not throwing out a real game plan, but they offered no resistance. And it's hard to know.
It's preseason, Scott, but that defense is going to be, you asked me about offensive lines last year. How many starters can you name on the Arizona Cardinals defense?
At this point, I'd cut everybody. You know, here's how I feel about Arizona. I know the question is about Rice, but if somebody just said, if I was just walking through an airport and somebody said, hey, P&L, who's the worst team in the NFL? I'm like, Arizona Cardinals, have a nice day. I mean, I'm not even thinking about, I'm not thinking Houston Texans. I'm not thinking of one of the teams in the NFC South, which, you know, everybody, I think everybody there thinks they could maybe win it. I do think Tampa Bay should blow it up and try to get Caleb Williams, but Arizona looks horrendous. Now, Rice is interesting. Second round draft capital. It's funny, the guy I've been drafting here, and it's not a home run pick. It's like I'm hoping to hit a single, is Richie James. I think Richie James, who caught 70 balls last year for the Giants, might be more effective or more used than people want him to be. Again, it's going to be what? 74 for 760 yards and 5 touchdowns. I mean, you know, maybe it's like a best ball depth guy. I don't know how startable he'll be in managed league. So is there even a payoff there? A lot of buzz for Sky Moore. We know Tony, the whole, if Tony can stay healthy, if Tony can play 17 games, first of all, Kadarius Tony's never going to play 17 games, certainly not this season. And I'm not, Tony's the talent here, but there's red flags on him already. I don't want to draft him where he goes and not feel I can play him the first time I need him. So I don't know, Rice. You could talk me into Rice. It's one of these things where it's like, if I was co-managing a team with you, I'll do a team with Frank Schwab, or at least one or two teams later this summer. You could talk me into Rice. I think I'd need to be some conviction from the other person. Yeah. I don't have it yet. I'm just afraid that maybe there isn't a right answer here, because it sounds crazy. But last year, Mahomes had a MVP season, and the wide receiver room really had no right answer.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure there's going to be one either. Again, we'll talk Chiefs wide receivers here later. But I think all we're looking for right now is, like, can a guy like Rashee Rice or Justin Ross, obviously, who had another nice little showing there. It's just good to see Justin Ross playing football, period. And, like, if he makes the roster, that's a huge W. Because, yeah, I think it sounds kind of like Kadarius Toney's going to start the year on IR, which means he's going to miss the first 3 weeks or whatever. And then that'll just keep them carrying him throughout the year. But I think we're going to see if any of these guys can unseat Justin Watson is the thing, who seems to be like an Andy Reid favorite, and even Chiefs fans can't really figure it out. So last rookie receiver note, my guy Josh Downs is officially the starting slot receiver over Isaiah McKenzie. That was made clear in the second preseason game. I love Josh Downs, but I'm just hoping Anthony Richardson can support Michael Pittman. So, like, all of these guys are on the dynasty radar, or like later in the season radar.
Before you go to the running backs, let me just quickly say about JSN. I'm, as you are, a card carrying member of the Lockett fan club, and I love that you can draft him at his floor, but all my Lockett belief, all my Lockett trust, all my Lockett shares require JSN not to blow up the NFL right away. I know JSN's going to be a great player. He may be a great player in the middle of the season. By the end of the season, when I draft Lockett, I'm hoping JSN doesn't detonate in September. When I saw him catch that pass from Drew Lock, I'm human. I can't be like, oh man, what if JSN's good right away? What if he's good on week one?
And this he's is going to be good on week one.
He might be. Now, granted, tight ends are nothing special. They don't really throw to their running backs. I think this offense can support three good receivers. You mentioned Randy Moss earlier, right? I mean, Randy Moss was drafted in 1998 to a team that had Chris Carter, Jake Reed, and the NFL hadn't pivoted to three wide receiver sets yet. A lot of the case against drafting Randy Moss that year is like, well, how much will he be on the field? You know, three receiver set, who runs those regularly? Well, of course, now the whole NFL does. Maybe the offense can just support three guys. And again, remember, don't tell me this is a crowded route tree, because the tight ends aren't going to do much. You know,
exactly.
They're going to get 370 yards and four touchdowns. So what? It'll be annoying when they score touchdowns, but whatever. But JSN has me a little bit nervous that maybe I've overplayed the Lockett hand.
But shouldn't it make you even more nervous, Scott, that, and I love all three of these receivers. I think you could draft all three of them at ADP and it's fine. But just playing devil's advocate here, like, DK Metcalf is wide receiver 15. He's the 33rd overall player off the board in consensus ADP. Shouldn't that make you more nervous than for Tyler Lockett? Again, just because I think we are still drafting him so close to his floor as the 67th overall player off the board. But I definitely agree with you that JSN as the 86th player off the board, the 37th receiver, is a green light pick for me. Like, so I, and because of that, I'm just like, yo, Metcalf at that high is that a little concerning? But my take is just that I think Geno can support all three of these guys. I think he was good enough last year to do it.
It just blows my mind that JSN, Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson, Marvin Harrison Jr. and Jameson Williams, I don't know if all five of them were on the Ohio State roster at the same time, but at least four of them were. That's just ridiculous. I mean, Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to be great. Jameson Williams had to get, I always say this, to get playing time, he had to go to Alabama because he couldn't break through. He got hurt a little bit in Ohio State. He ended up transferring. And obviously the transfer portal is crazy in college football now. But just five receivers like that at the same time, it makes me dizzy, man. I mean, if you want to do all your reception perception scouting, you basically do the SEC and you do Ohio State.
That's it. Yeah. Egbuka, their other receiver, is probably their slot receiver. He's probably going to be a first round pick next
for
year,
sure.
Too. So Brian Hartline doing some good stuff there.
who was a darn good receiver himself. He was a Ohio State kid. I think he had 1,000 yards a couple times with the Dolphins. He was not a bad player.
Yeah. Rookie running backs also flashed. Tajay Spears, highlight reel touchdown for the Tennessee Titans. He's definitely somebody to keep an eye on as maybe Derrick Henry's pure backup, but also a guy that maybe they can give a little run to as well. Deuce Vaughn, another Houdini-like touchdown for the Dallas Cowboys. I think producer Colin, who wrote this in the outline, has this completely right, that Rico Dowd is probably the name for the running back two spot in Dallas. He had a really nice night, but Deuce Vaughn is going to play a role. Like, I think he's going to I don't know if he, like, I don't know if he's like a draftable guy or somebody that needs to be on fantasy rosters, but he's going to play a role. Tank Bigsby also got serious run with the Jacksonville Jaguars, had a pretty nice outing himself. I think his role is kind of TBD on this offense, but that I'm ready to believe anything about how that split goes. Like, I think Travis Etienne's the lead back, but how much Tank Bigsby works in is going to basically be kind of determined by Travis Etienne and how he plays the first 3 weeks of the season. And last one here, Dolphins running back Devon Achane was carted to the locker room in the second half of the team's preseason week two game against the Texans. He's kind of buried on the depth chart anyways. Like, he got into the game really late, and he's a player that he's the first one that goes off the board at that running back room. I mean, he's not a super high pick or anything. He's outside the top 40 backs, you know, consensus ADP wise. He's running back 41 though, 123rd overall. He's probably a guy that maybe shouldn't be drafted at this point. So that was the big headline from the rookie running back room. But a lot of these guys did pop in preseason.
Yeah. I'll give you a really quick take on all of these guys. Spears is one of my favorite backup running backs to take, just the odometer on Henry. It just seems really clear because it's different. You know, when a wide receiver gets hurt, if Tyreek Hill gets hurt in Miami, there's no Tyreek Hill on the bench. Now, I'm not saying Spears would be Derrick Henry, but he steps into projectable volume the moment Henry's not available. So I would like to have shares of him. The thing with Vaughn, he's a fun player. Yeah. But to make him fantasy relevant, you have to say that he's Darren Sproles. That's like the one comp you can come up with. It's hard to get past the height and weight on that type of player in the NFL. So I think Vaughn's just a guy I'm rooting for, a guy I'm not going to draft. Bigsby, Doug Peterson, that makes me very worried about Travis Etienne. I don't think Travis Etienne has the automatic goal line equity for Jacksonville, and he's been somebody I'm not going to take at ADP. He's a yellow slash red light player for me. Also, I don't think he's the receiver he was billed to be. I think people thought he was going to come in the NFL and catch 60, 70 balls. That's just not going to happen. The case with Kane, you know, what's going to happen with him? He's going to get drafted, not play a lot, and get cut. This is what I want you to do. I want you to pick him up later in the season.
Yep.
When the other guys have had a chance to do something wrong or get hurt or whatever. And there's going to be a lot of flux in this, but there's two veteran running backs that the Dolphins already know and have a comfort level with. They're going to be the guys you play early on. It's going to be really hard to hold a Kane through him not playing. It's like, okay, what do you get? He got 13 snaps last week and 2 touches. Good luck keeping him for another week. You want to be in the second wave for him, not the first wave.
Totally agree. Achane's definitely that guy. With just on Deuce Vaughn, I agree with you. I think it would probably take an injury to Tony Pollard, I think, for him to be fantasy viable. And even then, it would still be a bit of a stretch. And yeah, just last thing on the Dolphins too. Jeff Wilson's probably the guy that if you're doing hero RB type stuff, you're looking for maybe the guy that gets off to the fast start in September. I think he's probably your name there. It's a low ceiling pick, but I think he could give you some moments. Last rookie to note here, Aiden O'Connell for the Las Vegas Raiders. Kind of looks the part, man, so far in preseason. I've even seen some people throw out the Dak comp, right? They're day three draft picks, maybe the starter. You know, he's injury prone, right? Jimmy's obviously had struggles to stay healthy. Tony Romo was kind of on his last legs at that point when Dak had that preseason moment. We know he then retired and went to the booth. They both wear the number 4. So I don't know. Is Aiden O'Connell somebody we should know simply because of Jimmy G's injury concerns? And we sure as hell care about the number one pass catcher on the Las Vegas Raiders roster.
Oh, for sure. Although I've been scared to draft Davante Adams. And once receivers turn 30, they don't lead the NFL in receiving yards. We know that's like a bad bet. O'Connell's a fun story. I mean, he was a walk-on at Purdue. I mean, he was one of those guys they orchestrated him to walk on. It's kind of like a pseudo scholarship, but I mean, he still he was given nothing when he went to Purdue. He ended up being an all second team Big Ten quarterback. And if nothing else, I got to figure they like him more than Brian Hoyer, who was like 57 now. I mean, Brian Hoyer, who's probably like, you know, we talk about immaculate grid all the time. Brian Hoyer is going to be a pretty good answer because he's played for everybody. It feels like not particularly well. He must be great in the quarterback room, or maybe he's great. Maybe he'll be a great coach someday. A lot of times like backup.
He should just be the quarterback coach. Right, he has sneaky played for a lot of teams, dude. Because I know he started with the Patriots and he was back with the Patriots. He's actually had 3 stints with the Patriots. Patriots, Cardinals, Browns, Texans, Bears, 49ers, Patriots,
Colts,
Patriots again, Colts, and then back to the Patriots and now the Raiders. I mean, my God, Scott, I feel like every time we get to the news, we finish with, hey, this guy could be a good immaculate grid player.
Yeah, when I'm stuck, when I don't have a right answer, I'm just going to say Brian Hoyer and hope it's right.
Oh, man. Yeah, I'm glad we got to Brian Hoyer because I don't play by myself. I play in like a group chat with three of my friends. And it's always nice. It's always nice when you can drop. I dropped JT O'Sullivan for 49ers Lions and that one got a reaction. That's awesome. So it's always good. Yeah,
that is awesome.
YouTube star JT O'Sullivan.
Very well played. Is it weird? That's such a weird place with Garoppolo, right? I mean, he was like a star for a minute. And then he was like the most overrated player in the NFL for a minute. Now he's just a player who he gets rid of the ball. High completion percentage, high injury risk. No, the upside, nobody dreams about it anymore. I'm at the point now, I kind of hope Aiden O'Connell plays this year. I hope we see it. And I get it. He'll probably come in and then he'll go 6-for-17. And people say, well, that's why preseason, you know, is just a joke and you shouldn't pay attention to it. But I think they found something here with Aiden O'Connell. And if nothing else, he's going to be the backup, I think, on opening day. And you don't have to be – I know you think franchise quarterback, you think first round. But there's been plenty of guys who didn't go in the first – Drew Brees was the second round pick, the first pick of the second round. Another Purdue guy, obviously famously Brady went late, the Kurt Warner story, Tony Romo. These guys pop right. Brian Fitzpatrick was, what, a seventh round pick, I want to say, who had a respectable career. Kirk Cousins was drafted the year they took RG3 in the first round. Cousins. What a gutsy pick that was. And of course, Cousins has the long career. Griffin, unfortunately, got hurt almost right when his career started. So who knows what would have happened with him, the Heisman Trophy winner. But I think Aiden O'Connell is going to play 10, 12 years in the NFL. As a starter, I don't know. But I'm excited to see what he can do. And if nothing else, I'll say this, okay? If you want to draft Devontae Adams, and I really don't, but it would have been like, well, what if Garoppolo gets hurt? Brian Hoyer, look out below. I think at least Aiden O'Connell gives him a chance.
Hey, I'll take that. I'll take that solace, that's for sure. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, it's time to kick off Convictions Week. All right, we're kicking off Convictions Week here on the podcast, which means this week we are locking in our takes for the year. These are the things we really believe. Again, that's what conviction is all about. That's what fantasy football is all about. It's about having convictions about things and taking a stand. So we're going to be doing that with sleepers here on this podcast today. We've got bold predictions with Austin Eckler and Eckler's Edge the following episode. That's going to be a lot of you people and your convictions out there, not as much us. We've got busts. We've got breakouts. All our strongest takes will be shared this week before draft seasons get really rolling here. So, Scott, we have compiled our secret lists, Andy Barron-style secret lists of sleepers. We're just going to ping-pong back and forth, see if we got any names that overlap here. For the people out there who are the sleeper police, and I know there are many of you.
Yep.
Scott and I went back and forth about it, and just it's kind of sleepers. What is a sleeper? Okay, I googled some articles where it's like, oh yeah, this guy is a sleeper and he's going in the damn fourth or fifth round. I don't know about that. I set us at nobody that's going in the first seven rounds can be considered a sleeper, which makes the exercise much harder. Scott, this is how you know we're trying to actually give out some good advice here, not just trying to take a victory lap and like back pat. If you want to talk about a guy that's going in the sixth or seventh round as a breakout, we'll talk about that when we get to the breakouts episode. For sleepers, these are guys going eighth round or later. I will let you get us started. And if you would like to rail on the sleeper police, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, the sleeper police, they live inside of my head. They come to me in my bed. I'm gonna cheat. I'm gonna say it right now. I'm cheating on this sleeper segment, okay? And this is how you're cheating.
On
the first pick. I'm coming out hot with a cheating pick.
Okay.
The Pittsburgh passing game.
Okay? Oh, well.
That's Kenny Pickett. So that's Pat Freiermuth. So that's George Pickens. You, dear listener, can pick the one you like. Is it the second year Pickett? Is it the second year Pickens? See that catch he made in practice? What, man, I watched that like 17
Which
times
one?
Over and over again.
Which one?
Great question. Great question. George Pickens,
by the way, he's going seven, like the 10th pick of the seventh round on average, George Pickens, 80th overall. So totally pretty reason. Even Deontay Johnson is like a seventh round pick.
For sure.
The
for third, sure.
71st overall player. So
if I really want the cheat, I could have said Pittsburgh offense and tied Jalen Warren in here, which I was tempted to do. But I thought the passing game.
He's mostly going to be their passing down back, most likely, mm-hmm. Scott. So honestly, this is all working for you. You're speaking my language.
He might have standalone value for sure. And who knows? Maybe he's more explosive than Najee Harris. That's certainly in play. The key here is Pickett, because he's the connective tissue for everybody. And I thought Pickett played pretty darn well the last quarter of the season. I know it's a joke. They had no touchdowns and Deontay Johnson had no touchdowns and all that. But Mike Tomlin, no losing record. I know we don't like Matt Canada, the offensive coordinator, but there's so much talent and it's all on the escalator. Second year receiver, second year quarterback, third year tight end. Those are when breakouts happen. Somebody's going to pop here. Maybe they all pop. I want to draft the Pittsburgh passing game. I'm going to leave it at that.
I mean, Scott, I purposefully
great cheating by me, by the way.
Oh, A+ cheating. I'm gonna give you an A+ grade for cheating for sure. I purposely left off how good Kenny Pickett and the offense looked from the preseason news and notes here, because I am so desperately not to talk myself into this offense, and I really like the way it sets up. Even the like role player guys, which I think most likely Jaylen Warren is probably a role player. I don't think he can be a true like 1B to Najee Harris in the committee, but he did rip off, you know, a 62-yard touchdown run. Look, I know you don't want me to talk about Allen Robinson, but like not as a fantasy guy, but as a role player. You know, I think he's fine as a third receiver. Calvin Austin, probably not on the fantasy radar, but that dude's got juice. I really liked Calvin Austin coming into the draft a couple years ago before he missed his entire rookie season last year.
Nobody drafts receivers better than the Steelers. I mean, I know it's easy to say that, but who's second at that? I don't know. It could be like 10 different teams. The Steelers know how to, and they're never first round picks. Antonio Brown and Martavis Bryant and Juju. It just goes on and on. All the guys they have now, it's ridiculous. None of them first round picks.
They've had some misses along the way. Sammy Coates, Lima Swede, Chase Claypool. Yeah. I think you got to call Chase Claypool a miss too.
Claypool was good the first year, and then he totally forgot how to play football. And then fortunately, they packaged him to Chicago. Yeah,
it worked out for him. I mean, if you say they get Joey Porter Jr. is Chase Claypool, like, and he ends up being a good player, I think it's fine. But no, overall, I love this call because these are all players I've been proactively drafting. All of the Pittsburgh passing players. Again, those role players, even if Allen Robinson's not on the fantasy radar, even if Calvin Austin's not on the fantasy radar, like the fact that their third and fourth receiver is pretty interesting and probably fits into a decent role. Like Calvin Austin's just got juice, again, to the point that Kenny Pickett can uncork one to him, right? Like Robinson knows how to beat zone coverage still at this point as the slot receiver. That's going to help Kenny Pickett. And then the top two receivers, I think, are dudes. Like, I love Deontay Johnson as a route runner. I love George Pickens as a vertical X receiver. And if he expands his game even more, which I tweeted about this on Friday, there is evidence of him being that player at Georgia. And you and I are both all in, I think, on Pat Freiermuth at this point. So, yeah. Hey, if you're going to cheat and bucket all these guys together, let's put it this way, Scott. This is how you sell it. The Pittsburgh Steelers are the sleeper offense of fantasy football this year.
I love it. Sign me up.
Great. Just hope the coordinator can like kind of just come along for the ride.
Yeah. Can they just fire Matt Canada like, you know, 2 hours before opening day?
I had Kenny Pickett on my list of sleepers.
Kenny Pickett sign his own, call his own plays.
Oh man. What could go wrong? What could go wrong with hyping this offense? Okay. Sleeper pick for me. I mentioned it earlier. I do think Sky Moore is a really good sleeper. And the reason I wanted to put him in the sleeper bucket as opposed to the breakout bucket is because the breakout police are actually way more strict. They're way like harder enforcers than the sleeper police. You know, you're actually not allowed to call people a breakout unless they've had like a top 24 season. I've been told that before. Anyways, Sky Moore, I'm not sure what his ceiling is necessarily, but I think he's a good player. I think he is clearly taking over the Juju Smith-Schuster role in this offense. Good route runner, good hands. I think he fits well into that flanker slot receiver role. He might have, you know, like 80 catches and 900 something yards and maybe 5 touchdowns or something like that. Again, maybe that's like his ceiling this year in an offense that I do believe is going to spread the ball around. But he's a guy that's going off the board so late in drafts. Mm-hmm. Like right now, Sky Moore is the 110th overall player off the board, the 46th receiver. Maybe he's not a home run, but I think you might be able to hit a double or maybe even a triple taking him at that late of the draft.
What was your feeling when he came out of Western Michigan? What did you see when you scouted him?
I loved him. I thought he had a ton of potential. His reception perception is really good. The thing was, he was playing at a lower level, right? He was a guy that was Western Michigan, not a high level of competition. For sure. He was even a guy that admitted kind of halfway through his rookie season that he needed to be reworked kind of from the ground up by Andy Reid and that staff there. And I think his rookie year was basically always going to be a red shirt because it is just so hard to go from that level of offense, that level of competition to Andy Reid's offense, which is very complicated for wide receivers. It's why rookies really almost never shine there at any point. So I think he is a name to remember. Yeah, I really liked him overall as a prospect.
Totally fine with, look, you're going with more second-year receiver, good offensive infrastructure, ecosystem drink. Yeah, I'm totally fine with that. I mean, you're looking when Moore gets picked, that's when all of your picks have to be, for the most part, upside. Maybe you sprinkle in a couple of floor guys. So I'm totally fine with that. And by the way, speaking of sprinkling in floor guys, because floor guys get dumped on, and we're supposed to talk all boring later if we have time for that. I'll have to be really concise about those guys. But you know who's pretty boring, but I'm putting him on the sleeper list anyway, is Tyler Higbee. He's coming off a 72 catch season, and he'll be drafted as a tight end backup in some leagues. And right now, look, Cooper Kupp, I realize, you know, dominates the passing game here. People are trying to talk themselves into some of the younger receivers with the Rams, and maybe a guy will pop. But Sean McVay and Matthew Stafford know Higbee. He's going to run a ton of routes. He's going to be on the field. He's going to have a huge snap share, which sometimes I think that's overrated for tight ends because we want them to run out for passes. If they're on the field blocking, that doesn't really help us. But I think Higbee might catch 80 balls this year. Now, granted, it might be for 690 yards and six touchdowns, but I think you're going to get your money back and there's room for profit where he goes. It's not the sexiest pick. Sleepers, you're thinking, oh, I'm going to win my league. No. Tyler Higbee's not going to win your league, but I think he's been mispriced all summer.
I agree with you. He's tight end 15, 126 overall player. I actually had Van Jefferson as one of my sleepers, like as a guy that I'm trying to figure, because I like Puka Nacua, but he's a day three rookie. Tutu Atwell, I think, has turned into a viable role player, but again, he's a role player. I like Van Jefferson as a vertical X receiver. I think people forget his second season, the year they won the Super Bowl, was pretty good. I don't think he's a superstar or anything. I don't think he has wide receiver one potential, but I think he can be a value pick at ADP. But I love this Tyler Higbee call. And the reason I love the Tyler Higbee call is because, and I'm going to use this to transition to my next guy as well here. I love taking Tyler Higbee, Scott, as this boring floor guy that's going to get off to a good start, probably because Matthew Stafford's going to be on the field. Even like, hey, is Cooper Kupp not 100% in week one? That just bumps the target projection for Tyler Higbee. And if you can take Tyler Higbee and then take Luke Musgrave, the Packers rookie tight end who has been on the field just an absolute ton in preseason with the starting offense. Like, he looks 100% locked in, played 100% of the snaps, 100% of the routes with the starters. So that's like a pretty decent floor anyways, but he's earned 5 targets on 17 preseason routes so far, Luke Musgrave. There's a ceiling there for him. But again, I love taking your guy, Tyler Higbee, and then a sleeper tight end in Luke Musgrave, who has that upside, even if, again, Higbee is the boring player.
That's the way you balance it, right? You make the Ozzie Nelson pick conservative. You make the Ozzie Osbourne pick with your hair on fire. I like that mix.
I love the way you said that, too. And there are guys, too. I think Higbee also makes sense if, like, you take a Chig Okonkwo later or something like that.
Oh, you're looking on my sleeper list. I have another tight end.
Well, you can take him. Take him, though, because he's somebody I considered. Him. Take him.
It's real simple, right? Second year tight end. I know he's not a blocker. I know he's not going to have a great snap share, but he makes explosive plays. 14.1 yards per catch last year. I think he had 3 catches over 40 yards. And what's his competition? Back nine, DeAndre Hopkins. Yeah, he'll dominate the targets and everything, but this is not DeAndre Hopkins Pro Bowl, DeAndre Hopkins. Do we even know any other receiver here is good? I mean, Burks is already hurt.
I know
they're telling you what Okonkwo can't do, but eventually they're going to have to pay attention to what he can do. I think he's going to be second in this team in targets, man, or second in receiving touchdowns. And I'm not going to sweat. This is a case where I don't care how often he's on the field. When he's on the field, I want him running routes. If he's on the field running downfield routes, I'll live with a snap. Don't care about the snap share. Just make sure, as long as he's getting downfield, I think he's somebody. I'll even hold this and wait for it to develop. I'll give him a few weeks. Maybe if I'm not starting him right away, I think he could easily be a top 10 tight end maybe the last 8, 9, 10 weeks of the season. You might have to wait for it. I know that's not for everybody, but I'm prepared to wait for Okonkwo.
Me too. I'm with you 100%. I didn't have him on my list, but I just think he makes sense in that Tyler Higbee tight end build. And look, we got pretty important results on him in the preseason. He played 100% of the snaps in 11 personnel. Like you said, when he's going to be out there, he is going to be running routes. I don't know that he's going to be, you know, setting the edge for Derrick Henry a ton with this team. But again, looks like the team trusts him in 11 personnel. He took 11 snaps, ran six routes, got two targets in week two of the preseason. And honestly, Scott, you mentioned the yards per reception. This guy was ridiculous last year from an explosive play potential. First in yards per route run among players with 30 plus targets. First in yards per reception, 14 yards per reception. Tied for first in yards after the catch per reception. All this stuff sort of blends in together. Like the yards per route run can be boosted by yards after catch. Just overall, he was top five in yards per route run overall. So this guy was, I think he's good. He's explosive. And if he's getting those targets, I do agree with you that I think he is. And some of this is because Burks is injured now. Also, some of it is just the questions I had about him as a player. I think he's the second most valuable pass catcher on that team this year.
For sure. And it's so funny. He was not used that way at Maryland, but I give the Titans credit. They're a very well-run organization. Vrabel's one of the best coaches in the league. And I don't think Tannehill, maybe he's not a kingmaker at this point of his career. I don't think he's dusted, though. I think Tennessee has a puncher's chance of winning this division. I mean, I'm not just gifting it to the Jaguars. Are you? I think Tennessee's going to be a competitive team.
They'll always be competitive as long as Mike Vrabel is
there. Yeah, for sure.
Like, period. And I think Tim Kelly is the offensive coordinator is an upgrade over what they were dealing with last year.
If we drafted coaches long term, Mike Vrabel, not only would he be a top five pick, he might be a top two or three pick.
Yeah, younger guy that should still be around, and they've just always been competitive with him. Always been competitive. I'll go running back here. Mm-hmm. Sleeper running backs. How can this go wrong?
Sure.
I think Khalil Herbert is now officially on the sleeper radar. And I was hesitant with this one because I thought it was going to be
sure if he qualified or not, because I probably would have taken him too, but go ahead.
He's fringy, right? Okay. I'm looking at his ADP right now. I think he is squarely he's squarely an eighth round pick, kind of late eighth round pick, 95th overall player off the board. I know that's going to rise some of the preseason stuff, but I was hesitant to put him on this radar at all because I thought it would be a straight up committee, but Herbert rested with most of the starters while Deonta Foreman played in the first quarter. Roshan Johnson played in the second quarter of this past week. And we know he had a great preseason and played every single snap in the first preseason game. So I think he is squarely a sleeper running back to the point that I was not proactively clicking him. Now I'm willing to proactively click Khalil Herbert. He doesn't have a perfect run out. He's still going to play with a mobile quarterback. The Bears offense, how good are they really going to be? But I think he fairly has to be considered a sleeper pick at this point.
Yeah, it's just a case of, this is why I like drafting early, because that ADP is going to correct. It was hard to take the Bears that preseason game they had a week ago at face value, where I talked about the Titans and liking Mike Vrabel. I thought Mike Vrabel was going to cut six people after the Khalil Herbert touchdown because the angles and the compete level was just horrible. But again, we're talking about guys, a lot of them who aren't going to make the team or certainly won't be starters. But I'm with you on Herbert. He's a perfect, if you can draft Herbert where he's not a starter for you opening day, where he's a flex or even a bench guy, I think you've done really well. And he's got the ceiling in this backfield that I like the most. Going to go back to a receiver. You know, we were spoiled. 2014, the rookie year for receivers that broke all the rules, where you could take these guys in year one, year two. And we've kind of played it that way for the past decade. It used to be come back in year three. And Nico Collins is in his third season. Brandon Cooks.
Oh, man. Let's go.
You have Nico Collins too?
I have him on my list.
So, look, Brandon Cooks kind of low-cal quit in this team last year. I think Brandon Cooks is going to be a lot more engaged with the Cowboys, and he's actually a value pick for me, maybe even an all-boring guy, although he didn't make that list. Year three for Collins. And look, I don't want to expect miracles from C.J. Stroud. I dare him to play as bad as his quarterback room was last year. Nico Collins is going to get he's going to get downfield targets, which is kind of it's a pro and a con. Is it a gift or a curse, right? Because it's going to be weeks he's going to have a ton of air yards and no production to speak of. And you don't get those air yards. Some people call them prayer yards at times. They don't count in your fantasy stats. It's like almost touchdowns are not a stat. But he's going to be on the field. He's going to lead this team in targets, probably lead this team in receiving touchdowns. And I give at least Stroud maybe a 25% chance to be really good right away. Right away being, by September, we'll be confident that he's like a bona fide NFL quarterback for the next 10 years. Yeah, Nico Collins. I think, again, you're going to draft him not as a starter. And we talked a lot about, I want my receivers to start themselves. I want you to have the best or second best receiver room in your league. And I still want all that. But eventually you have to fill out your bench. And what kind of player should be on your bench? What does a fourth receiver or fifth receiver look like for fantasy? It looks like Nico Collins.
I couldn't agree with you more, man. And I've said that I really like what he's shown. the first couple of years of his career kind of quietly. I think he was starting to break out last year before the groin injury. Like, because Brandon Cooks, as you mentioned, was kind of quiet quitting. And then he just started to jump into a little bit there. He was getting that volume. I think he's a good player. I think he can separate in the intermediate areas. He can separate in the short areas, and he's a combative downfield player. CJ Stroud definitely looked much more comfortable in the second preseason game. 7 of 12, 60 yards. I think he looked much better. And this offense, I think, is going to be pretty good. I know there are some injuries on the offensive line, but overall, it's a good unit. I like Damian Pierce as a running back. I love Nico Collins. Dalton Schultz, a nice little tight end. And Robert Woods, you know, maybe he's going to give him something as well. We'll see. So I love your Nico Collins pick here. And I agree with you. Even if I've loaded up the receiver room early, and these are, all, like you said, guys that are going to start themselves, he's the perfect fourth or fifth receiver because he's going to have a nice floor, like targets alone. But I think he's got the ceiling as a player. And I think Stroud is going to be a good prospect in the long term.
We're both recommending Trident. Let's do it. Nico Collins, go time.
I think Zach Charbonnet makes a good sleeper pick as well. Look, I really like Kenneth Walker, but he's a guy who's dealt with injuries so far to this point in his career. I'm so invested in the Seattle Seahawks passing game. I think you have to throw Charbonnet out there as a guy who could be a perfect mix of a grinder back early, but also can play a little bit in the pass game. We've seen him be sort of an outlet receiver and play on pass down so far in the preseason. So I think him and Khalil Herbert are kind of my two sleeper running backs at this point that I really like.
I mean, when they drafted Charbonnet where they did, it just told you why they like Walker, what they think there's things he can't do. Not just he's not going to catch a lot of passes, but Walker's a home run hitter. He's a boomer bust runner, and Charbonnet's probably going to have a higher success rate. Pete Carroll also, right? The special sauce in Seattle is competition. Maybe 10 years ago it was Adderall, but it's Pete Carroll wants competition at every position. That's why, even though they had two good receivers, they drafted JSN. They had a running back they liked. They drafted Charbonnet. He's an interesting guy for me, and it's easy to see a situation where this is a case where if you look at two players on the same team, this will tie into my final pick, and you can see the second guy drafted as easily being the player who outperforms the first guy. It's like, well, why not just wait around for the second guy?
Yeah.
And that's how I feel. I know it's a gut punch for everybody like you and I. We love Terry McLaurin. Okay. And I don't even know if Jahan Dotson qualifies as a sleeper, but I saw his Yahoo ADP is out. It's still in the last 7 days. It's still outside the top 100. I'm not going to get that when I draft. People are going to snipe me on Dotson and then mock me for it. Haha, you wanted Dotson, didn't you, P&O? Yeah, I did. He's going 40 picks after Terry McLaurin. I think he has like a 55-45 chance, the short end, of being their leading receiver. The target share was just about even at the end of last year. And you might say, well, is Sam Howell any good? You know, is Brissett any good? I dare them to be as bad as the quarterback play was last year. And also, we've talked a lot about touchdowns, right? Touchdowns can be – receiving touchdowns can be fluky. And, you know, Deontay Johnson's not going to score zero touchdowns again and all that, and, you know, regression. But I think players own some of their touchdown rates. It's kind of like BABIP in baseball, where when people first introduced the idea of batting average balls in play, the assumption was that, okay, anything that isn't going over the fence, it's just this random lottery if it's a hit or not. And then we found out, no, pitchers control some of their BABIPs against, and hitters control some of their BABIPs for, and it's not a complete random thing. And that's how I feel about touchdown rates. Is there randomness? Yes. Sometimes you get tackled at the 2-yard line. Sometimes you're wide open and they miss you. I get it. But I think players own some of their touchdown rates, and maybe Dotson's just a better touchdown guy than Terry McLaurin. I hate to say negative things about McLaurin. I'm still giving him the 55 to the 45 to lead this team and, you know, being the best fantasy receiver. But when there's a 40-pick ADP gap, you have to draft Jahan Dotson, period. And because you want to do that, I don't want you to draft Terry McLaurin. You're tempted. You like him.
Yeah.
He's a captain. Another Ohio State guy, by the way. This is a Brian Hartline episode. I love everything about Terry McLaurin. I just think maybe Jahan Dotson might be better.
I feel so highly about Terry McLaurin. I think you can still draft Terry this year, but I'm 1000% with you with Jahan Dotson, who is the 12th pick in the 7th round in consensus ADP. So one pick. We let it slide here with Jahan Dotson as the sleeper pick. And we can get this out of the way that this way I don't have to talk about him on the breakout episode, because I definitely was going to talk about him on the breakout episode. I love Jahan Dotson. And I love your point, Scott, about touchdowns, because if you think his touchdown production was fluky last year, go pull up the plays and tell me why that's fluky. Like, he's a small player, he's not gonna score touchdowns. Well, he's one of the best contested catch receivers in the NFL, period, despite being, you know, 5'10", like sub 5'11", sub 190 pounds. The dude is a total baller. He's great in contest. And he was this guy in college. He was the best ball winner, the best hands in college football among those prospects that entered in the 2022 draft class. And there was a lot of good receivers, as we know, in that class. But he was extremely good in those contested situations, and he should remain that good. I'm with you 100%. Jahan Dotson, he's a total proactive pick to me, and a star route runner too, man. I mean, a really star route runner. I love him. I completely co-signed that last one. I'm going to go rapid fire here with just the rookie sleepers that I like this year, and then we'll get to the all boring team real quick before we get out of here. I think if you are targeting rookie wide receivers as upside darts, I think it's got to be Jaden Reed, who I love as a slot receiver for the Packers, and he's been pretty much a clear-cut starter. He looked really good. I scored the touchdown from Jordan Love. Marvin Mims in Denver looks like he's cemented as the third receiver now that we got an injury-free game of him. Really like him a lot. Jonathan Mingo, I think if somebody's going to shine in this Panthers receiver core, it's going to be Jonathan Mingo, who's a bit of a developmental guy, but looks like he's locked up the flanker role in this offense, which is pretty crucial. Those three guys. And the last one, Scott, I know we said that the Arizona Cardinals kind of send a shiver down our spine at this point. Michael Wilson is locked into the starting X receiver role in this offense. Marquise Brown, kind of an intriguing value pick in this offense. I mean, how many Cardinals do you really want to get excited about? But nobody is drafting Michael Wilson, except even on the sicko best ball sites, he's going so late. That he is almost, I mean, people joke like this guy's free in fantasy. He's the 268th overall player, the 91st receiver right now in consensus ADP. On Yahoo, he's the 239th overall player, Michael Wilson. So if you're looking for a deep sleeper, he is the deepest of deep sleepers and a player that I actually think I liked a little bit coming to the NFL.
Let me ask you one general wide receiver rookie question, and then I will go warp speed round through my all boring team because they're boring. They don't deserve long explanations. Overall, rookie wide receiver class, is this about an average class? Is it a little above average, a little below average? What's your feeling for this group as far just thinking what they're going to do this year?
Well, this year is tough just because all these guys are in, like Zay Flowers in Baltimore, volatile situation where I could see him being the third. I could see him being the top receiver there. Quentin Johnston, kind of the same thing. Maybe developmental rookie season, maybe important for the Chargers, right? Jackson's been the jig, but we know he's stuck behind two good guys, as we mentioned, but he's a very good player. Jordan Addison's the only one who's got like a moonwalk to the second receiver spot. And then all these other guys, like I said, you can squint and see a big season from Jaden Reed. You could squint and see a big season from a Jonathan Mingo type. So I think this is an average class talent-wise, and I would say it's probably an average spot as well.
I toy with putting Addison on the sleeper list. It's just weird that it's hard for me to figure out how he was a monster at Pittsburgh. And then he goes to USC in a year where Caleb Williams wins the Heisman Trophy and basically is on everybody's radar as should we just screw our next season to get this guy? And Addison was just okay.
I think the easy answer to that one, Scott, or at least my opinion, and by the way, Jordan Addison is going in the eighth round, fourth overall pick in the eighth round, 88th overall player. So he would qualify technically barely for the sleeper segment, but barely. He qualifies more than Jahan Dotson, but you know I'm going to let that slide totally because I love Jahan Dotson.
The thing with Dotson is his Yahoo ADP is outside the top 100. So I think usually Yahoo ADP is really sharp. That's a case where there's a blind spot to Dotson for some reason on Yahoo. I think his ADP is actually higher or earlier in other rooms.
So with Jordan Addison, at Pitt, he played off the line. He played a lot in the slot and was kind of like a vertical slot receiver, a vertical receiver off the line, but mostly on these like in-breaking routes, dig routes, slant routes, crossing routes, post routes. But then at USC, they moved him outside. He was primarily on the line of scrimmage and he had to work a lot against like physical press man coverage. He wasn't really good at getting on top of guys. So I think it was just a weird scheme fit, quarterback fit there for him where I think in Minnesota, you know, they have an established X receiver in Justin Jefferson and they're going to be able to move Jordan Addison into those advantageous spots. So he really does have just a crystal clear run out and I think that kind of explains what was different between the Pitt year and the USC year.
I like that. That's a great explanation.
All right, so I did say we are going to have the all boring team here on the sleeper episode. I just say again, we built a lot of excitement up. Let's kind of let's start playing down. Playing people down. You know, let's bring it down here a little bit. Let's introduce some smooth jazz into this and start easing us off into the night here. Scott, run through the all boring team here. You've got quarterbacks, you got running backs, you got a couple wide receivers and a tight end.
Yep.
And I'm going to pick my favorite of the all boring team here.
Again, I'm going to combine two of my favorite things, all boring with speed round. We don't have a lot of time here. Aaron Rodgers, Kirk Cousins, Geno Smith. I almost put Daniel Jones in here, but Jones doesn't fit the motif the other guys do, where they're all veterans and they all have a star receiver who can drag them. Garrett Wilson's going to the moon. Justin Jefferson's going first overall in most leagues. Geno Smith has maybe three dynamic receivers, at least two. So I'm happy to draft any of those. And it's a case of if you don't attack quarterback early, maybe you take two of these guys, mix and match on the matchups. I would love if I could ever get two of these in the Superflex, I'd be over the moon. Running back's a boring position in fantasy now. Nick Chubb is a first round pick who sometimes slides the second round. The good backups behind him are gone. He's going to lead the NFL in rushing. If you can get him in the second round, auto pick. Even with all my wide receiver ethos, I want the best receiver room in the league, receivers who start themselves. A three receiver start with Nick Chubb to me is heaven. Joe Mixon still on Cincinnati. Get all the touches basically to himself. Maybe he's not an efficiency darling, but actually the tape bros seem to like Mixon. They think he runs better than the numbers say, and he's just going to accidentally get 1,500, 1,600 total yards and 8 to 10 touchdowns. David Montgomery, look, Gibbs, first-round pick, but they're going to use him probably the way they used Swift last year. Montgomery's going to be the hammer from in close, a top-five offensive line, an offensive coordinator that we like. David Montgomery is going to outkick his ADP easily. Cam Akers was a top five back in the final quarter of last season for the Rams. Again, no competition here. I know this isn't a great team, and we want running backs tied to the positive game script, but I think Cam Akers just has all the touches he can handle, and he looked maybe more upside last year shown in that final quarter of the season. I think he's a really good running back too. Sometimes you're running back three in certain leagues. I did mention JSN makes me nervous, but you're drafting Tyler Lockett at his floor. He's been wide receiver 11 to 15, five straight seasons. Tight ends don't catch it here. The running backs may not catch it a lot. I don't think Geno Smith is going to turn into a pumpkin. I'm perfectly fine to draft him. So Tyler Lockett, again, you're taking him at his floor. His upside is he'll be top wide receiver 15 again. I think that's totally in play. You know, Matt and I don't agree on Jerry Jeudy. We've talked about him in the past. Didn't grade well in perception. I did like that Jeudy was productive late last season when Russell Wilson couldn't do anything right. Can Sean Payton fix Russell Wilson? It hasn't looked like it this summer, although they did have a Jerry Jeudy touchdown pass on a fourth down play. I think the defender slipped on that play. I still think Jerry Jeudy is the one receiver on this team I can draft. A couple of the dominoes have fallen, right? But a couple other receivers have gotten hurt. Judy's going to have, I think, 140 targets. We talked about Pat Freiermuth in my cheat code of Pittsburgh Steelers offense passing game. Third-year tight end. He scored touchdowns 2 years ago. Last year, they didn't give Kenny Pickett a pass. He actually played pretty well at the end of the season. And Pat Freiermuth, I know, gets the seal of approval from Matt Harmon. He's one of your tight end targets. I present to you, dear listeners, in speed round form, my all-boring team for 2023.
I love those quarterbacks, especially Kirk Cousins and Geno Smith. I've become weirdly Kirk-pilled this offseason, where I think, like, I know the stats don't show it, but I kind of think last year was the best year of his career. We won't get into that because that'll go on a longer conversation, but just how much they asked of him. Maybe it's the quarterback show on Netflix where you see how much he gets beat up and everything. But
Snap call. Who wins the NFC North?
I think the Vikings win the NFC North.
So it's kind of silly that the Lions are favored over them right now, right? I mean, I know Minnesota had a losing point differential. They still won 13 games. There's more good players on the Vikings, aren't there?
I think there are more star players on the Vikings. I mean, not really. Honestly, like, it's Kirk.
Detroit fix the secondary? That's the big question for me.
Yeah, that is the big question there. Just the defense overall. But I think Kirk Cousins and Geno make perfect Daniel Jones pairings and super flex, or even in manage one quarterback leagues.
Draft Daniel Jones. Perfect. Daniel Jones is gonna smash it. Daniel Jones could easily be like quarterback five, quarterback four, something like that. That's in play.
You want to take Anthony Richardson. I think Kirk Cousins makes a nice pair with him as well. And then the two running backs, David Montgomery, I've been drafting a lot, but Cam Akers, man, I can't figure out Cam Akers, bro. He is perfect for the all boring team because it's never like, oh yeah, I'm drafting Cam Akers. Great. But there's a chance he's just the lead back of this offense. And again, if Matthew Stafford is healthy, if Cooper Kupp is healthy, this offense is going to be better than we think.
You mentioned Anthony Richardson in passing. Did you consider putting him on the sleeper team?
Yes. But too easy. Too easy. I think I want to save him for another episode later this week.
Here's a really hard question to answer. I see a lot of different opinions on this. Is Anthony Richardson rookie year good enough to support Michael Pittman?
Yes, but I think that's it. And again, support being like, I think he can beat his ADP, but is he going to be a top 12 receiver? No, I don't think so. But I think Michael Pittman is good enough. I think he'll dominate first read targets enough that I think the answer is yes, but not.
I lean no, and I love Pittman. And I've
been, fair enough.
Pittman and McLaurin have been like two guys I've gone to war with, and it hasn't been pretty. And I don't blame them. I never blame them. I'll never blame Terry McLaurin for anything. And I'm pretty much there with Michael Pittman, but I'm afraid that Pittman, the best he'll do is meet his ADP. I don't see the ceiling here, but I could definitely be wrong. And if I'm wrong with a guy who charts every wide receiver, like an obsessive wonk that you are, it does make me nervous.
I think me as the obsessive wonk is a perfect place to end this podcast. The sleepers episode and the all boring team. Could you find a better pairing than that? That's like a good red wine and a good cut of steak right there, baby. That's what it's all about. Well, Scott, appreciate you doing this, man. We're going to get into our Sunday night cadence here pretty soon, buddy. Just every single week at this point, because it is happening. Football is here.
It's all happening.
Now you know the sleepers for this year. So shout out to you out there, the listeners. That's going to do it for us in this episode. If it's a social media app, Yahoo Fantasy is there. At Yahoo Fantasy on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. I'm at @MattHarmon_BYB. That's @Scott_Pianowski. You can also watch this show, by the way. You can just see me like crack a smile as soon as Scott says Jahan Dotson's name, or losing it when he says Kenny Pickett and the boys there as the sleeper offense of the year. How could you not want to watch that? How could you not want to see Scott's beautiful face? I mean, give me a break. Tomorrow, Austin Eckler is back for episode 2023, episode 2 of Eckler's Edge this preseason. This is your chance to get involved for Conviction Weeks, people. You got to send your boldest fantasy predictions for this season to askaustin@yahoo.com, yahoosports.com. Let me say that again, because I'm pretty sure it's Yahoo Sports. You got to send them to askaustin@yahoosports.com. Voice memos get bumped to the top of the line. Until then, we're out.